Lineup podcast. It's been 5 days, 6 days, 5 days since we did our last show.
When did we do that? Friday or Wednesday?
Wednesday. We did that Wednesday because I was leaving to go out of town Thursday through Saturday. So we did an early show last week. It is your host, Shep Jones, across the table, statistician Mitch George. We both got relatively decent sleep last night after a five hour 18-minute ball game for game five of the World Series. But before we get to that, we will backtrack and cover all the games that we have missed, starting with game three,
which happened on October 27th. And on the mound for each of the teams, we had McCullers for the Astros and we had Darvish for the Dodgers.
Wasn't a spectacular game.
Well, I mean, it's a normal game, but it's just been drowned out by all the spectacular games that we've been used to seeing.
Right.
I mean, we'll get to it, but the game before this one, game two, we thought that was the best world, or people were talking at least that was the best World Series game ever played, and now it's hard to say what happened last night isn't the best World Series game ever played. And now I think with those two games combined, depending on what happens in games six and seven, that this might be the best World Series back and forth of all time.
Definitely, if a game seven happens, then for sure, no matter what the outcome is, I think you're starting to push that envelope of being the best World Series in Major League Baseball history.
Right, and that's kind of funny to think about because it's not like we have the Yankees and Mets battling for New York here. We don't have the Yankees and Dodgers or any of these crazy huge rivalries that we baseball could set us up for, but it's two teams with a fairly limited history,
right?
In the Dodgers and the Astros.
Well, people forget that Houston.
Right, they were in the National League.
Right, they were in the National League, so they had some run-ins with LA.
They had run-ins, but it wasn't a rivalry by any means.
And this team now for Houston is, and as well, same for the Dodgers. They're both two completely different clubs than they were last time.
Right.
And it's been 12 years since Houston has made it this far because they lost in 05 to the White Sox for the World Series and haven't returned since. But looking at kind of the quick box score here for that game.
Game three.
Only one home run, I know. but that home run came in also a four-run inning for the Astros. Yep. And jumped all over Yu Darvish, who – he didn't look terrible, but he didn't look like typical Yu Darvish that comes out on the mound for the Dodgers.
Right.
And then Dodgers strike back in the following inning, getting a run. And then the fifth, Houston takes that run back. And then Dodgers squeak across two in the sixth, and that's all she wrote for game three. Kind of just middle of the road type of ball game.
Sure.
Wasn't anything too exciting.
And then one thing that kind of had repercussions on following games is that the Dodgers ripped through five people in their bullpen in that one game. So it combined, each of their pitchers went 1.1, 0.2, 0.2, 1, and 2.2, given that Darvish only went 1.2.
Right.
But on the other side, Houston only used two. They got 5.1 out of McCullers, who was their starter, and then Peacock pitched 3.2 innings and got a save out of it. So it's not necessarily good or bad bullpen management. It's just the fact that each of these two teams found themselves in very different circumstances in these two games.
Right. It's different ways of managing the game. And A.J. Hinch, from watching the series thus far, has been a little bit more reserved in using his bullpen guys. He's been kind of leaning on Peacock and Giles and Musgrove for the most part. I haven't seen Francisco Liriano at all, even warm up in the bullpen, so he's kind of I wouldn't trust Liriano either with the way his season has really panned out. But when you do run your opposing pitcher after an inning and two-thirds, you're going to have to use your bullpen.
Right, and then that could have long-term impact past what even we saw last night, because this was the third game of the series, and if you're ripping through relief pitchers like that, you're counting on your starting pitchers going deep. And to an extent they've gotten that, but not, I don't think to the extent that they would have won. I mean, they got a decent amount out of Kershaw last night, but that was for better or for worse, whatever you take it, because he wasn't on his game, I don't think.
Right.
But yeah, we'll talk about that game when it comes up. Anything else on this one?
Nope. Moving on to game four. Through the first eight innings, kind of a boring ball game. And then the ninth inning happened. It was 1-1 going into the ninth, and LA scores five in the ninth inning against Giles, who, as much as during the regular season he looked pretty good, right now he has his control is a little off.
Yep.
He's kind of spiking fastballs in the dirt, which it's not that hard to get a fastball in the zone and not in the dirt. So I don't know if it's a command thing or it's a situational thing being in the World Series, and he's a relatively young pitcher, so maybe the situation is getting to him on that aspect.
Right, and to come in and not even record an out, I mean, he came in, not sure how many pitches he threw, but he let up three runs, all of them earned, only on two hits, but he also walked a guy.
He threw eight pitches.
Eight, oh my goodness.
Eight pitches, and three of those pitches were considered strikes.
Beautiful. And then and two of those strikes were hits because hits count as strikes. So.
Correct.
Wonderful. Good going, kid.
Yeah. So three strikes. I'm assuming a four-pitch ball here.
Walk.
A walk. But then Musgrove kind of came in and did his best, but he also gave up another two earned runs, which I'll give Musgrove credit. He's not a terrible pitcher. He's pretty good. He came in and locked down the game yesterday. But it was, you know, a pedestrian-style game until about the ninth inning when L.A. was like, oh, wait, we're playing a baseball game right now.
A World Series baseball game.
Yeah, World Series baseball game, if anything else. And let's get the bats going. When did Culberson come in? Was that a run switch for Turner?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
The series for its entirety has been entertaining.
Oh, absolutely.
Majority of game four, not so much. Game three, it had its moments. Game five, however.
A little different.
A little different? There was a huge difference in yesterday's game. Total run time for that game was 5 hours and 17 minutes.
So if anyone's watching from middle school, that's just about as long as your school day.
Just about,
it's
yeah.
It's about 6 hours. Aren't those 6 hours? Are they 7 hours? Six or seven.
Six and a half? Let's just cut it in the middle.
We'll say six and a half. So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, not that. Man, our days are full long days now in college, depending on how you work your schedule. Yesterday was fun.
We had Kershaw and Keuchel go, and it's remarkable how shaky they both looked.
Mm-hmm.
They flashed certain portions where they looked like themselves, but, I mean, you're not used to seeing Clayton Kershaw give up more than one run per inning.
Yeah.
Even Keuchel on the other side, he let up three earned runs four total runs in just 3.2 innings pitched, and then both teams really had to dig into their bullpens late in the game, which will be really interesting to see what the manager's decisions will be tomorrow when we have Verlander versus Rich Hill. It's likely that we'll see that both managers will have a longer leash for those two. These two guys gave up three earned runs and six earned runs, but I would say that if a guy is giving up four or five earned runs even, let them fly just because you're not going to have that bullpen that you've had earlier in the series.
Right. Well, Kershaw's stat line, 4 2/3, four hits, six runs, six of the all six earned. The alarming thing is the three walks. It's either Kershaw is was losing his control or Houston hitters are really disciplined at the plate.
I, There were a few instances where he really lost his control. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it or what inning it was in. I think it was probably in the fourth or fifth inning mm-hmm. when he was throwing a slider and he just didn't get any break yeah. on it and just died into the dirt. And you could visibly see how frustrated he was, and he screamed, and it was mm-hmm. kind of, I don't know. I've never seen anything that intense in a baseball game before right. as far as being angry at yourself.
And on top of that, he's kind of got those critics who are like, can you actually perform on a consistent basis in the playoffs? So far to this point, he's been a pretty good pitcher. He's gotten yeah. knocked around here and there, but nothing to the extent of yesterday.
Yes.
I think yesterday Houston did their homework, and they'd already seen him once in the series. They knew what he was going to throw. They knew relatively where he was going to throw it, and jumped all over him. But that didn't stop Houston or the Dodgers from jumping on Keuchel early,
right.
who has not looked great for a solid portion of the playoffs. Three runs in the first, and Keuchel's stat line was 3 2/3, 5 hits, 4 runs, 3 of those earned, 2 walks and 4 strikeouts. And he threw, Kershaw threw 94 pitches, and Keuchel threw 86. 86 through not even 4 innings is scary.
Right, and you're going to pull both of those guys each time right. whenever they're at that mm-hmm. many pitches with that many runs allowed at that point in the right. ballgame.
But I was kind of moving back and forth yesterday between the Sunday Night Football game, which we'll do a little football recap after mm-hmm. all this, and the baseball game, and ended up, once the football game was over, I'm like, okay, I can stick solely to baseball. Mm-hmm. And by that point, I think it was the fifth inning where I kind of turned off football and moved over. That was a fun inning.
It was.
The game as a whole was so...
Back and forth. Tug of war, to use mm-hmm. cliches.
It's a gritty game.
Really was.
Like, no one quit.
Like, and it just... Baseball's not supposed to be that easy to come back in, because... It was just remarkable seeing the Dodgers in the top of the ninth inning score 3 runs to tie the game. Just you're not supposed to do that easily.
Right.
And I didn't think it was going to happen just because of what we saw in game two, just how easy they tied it up in that game, mm-hmm. and then they come back and tie it up this mm-hmm. game. And it's, for how much stake we put in closers these days, you're really seeing them falter a lot in this postseason.
Yeah, even Jansen now, because I was about to say, well, if you've got... Like, my head started going through the top name closers. I'm like, none of them have been really that great. Wade mm-hmm. Davis got knocked around. Chapman got knocked around. Andrew Miller, Brian Shaw, and Cody Allen all got knocked around for Cleveland.
Yep.
Now you've got Giles. You've got Jansen. Washington really didn't have a go-to closer.
And Sean Doolittle.
They would, yeah, I guess you could, yeah.
But really, it's almost like the home run ball. Like, mm-hmm. there's more stock being placed in the home run, just like more teams are putting more stock in these top-level closers that mm-hmm. just aren't putting out in the postseason, which is obviously when you need them to
right.
contribute to your team the most.
Well, and the game of baseball has changed so much because of video over the last 3-4 years, where you have this database of film to look at, and these meticulous stat sheets and reports on every kind of pitcher and every kind of hitter, where it's a whole new, different game now than it was in 2010, even.
Right.
Do I mind it? Not at all, because I like home runs. And home runs primarily happen in AL ballparks, for the most part, unless you're Giancarlo Stanton.
Then they happen anywhere.
Then they happen anywhere. But across the board, maybe with a couple of exceptions, AL ballparks are small compared to National League ballparks. You're not seeing a ton of home runs hit in LA mm-hmm. versus you're seeing a whole load come in.
That train track's been busy up there.
Oh, yes, it has. Yes, it has. So looking forward to game 6 and 7. It's 7 if necessary.
Right.
Because Houston now leads 3-2.
I'm really excited for this game that's going to happen tomorrow. I think that's going to be a really good game with Verlander and Rich Hill.
I think Verlander will end up being the better pitcher again
mm-hmm.
out of this pair.
Because
it's
agree.
Verlander's second start in LA. he had a pretty good game until, you know, even that one went into extra innings. And so his game two stat line was 6 innings, 2 hits, 3 runs, all 3 earned, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, 2 home runs. And those 2 home runs were, where are they going here? Peterson and Seager. And then Puig hit one in the 10th off of Giles. And Culberson hit one in the 11th off of Davinsky. So he gave up 2 home runs to one hitter in Seager, where you can kind of expect a long ball. Jock Peterson, you don't know what to expect anymore.
Right.
He's kind of up and down and not really consistent as he was even year one. Year one, he was kind of like, he had started out really hot as a rookie and
kind of tapered off a little bit.
Yeah. I got to... I don't know. It's do or die pretty much for LA. But their bullpen may be a little tired.
For how good both of these teams are, it's hard to imagine that we're even in an elimination game already, because they've just been fighting so hard that it doesn't seem like either one of them deserves to be eliminated at this point.
In 5 starts, or 4 starts for Verlander this postseason, he's 4-0 with a 2.05 ERA. And it's the ERA covers 5 games because he came in as a relief appearance. He's 9-0 with a 1.53 ERA in 10 games, 9 starts since joining Houston. Change of scenery is a real thing, and especially
for
baseball.
He really embraced it too.
Yeah, I think Houston closes it out. I'd like to see Dodgers win as a fan perspective, because you get that game 7, but as someone who follows baseball and knows a hot hand type of thing, Houston's pumped up after last night's game.
I'm probably in the minority here, but I really want to see a pitcher's duel. I mean, I know you might not, I don't know, but I really want to see a pitcher's duel. If both of these guys could pitch into the 8th inning and let up 2 or less runs, I mean, that's a lot to ask, obviously, but I think that would be fantastic. I'd just like to see both these teams get rewarded for having these good pitchers. But when it comes to my prediction, I would think that Houston's going to close it out too. But I don't think, and I hope that neither of these teams go over 5 runs tonight or tomorrow night.
So you want a low scoring?
I want a low scoring game.
You want a low scoring potential clinch game?
Yeah, kind of a traditionalist in that sense, because
I want Houston to blow out the Dodgers.
See, that'd be cool too, but I think that. I don't know. I just, with the suspense level that it would take, or that would be present, given the fact that what we know these two teams can do and how fast they're able to come back, I think if you say it's 4-3 or even 4-2 or 5-3 going into the 8th or 9th inning with Houston ahead, you can't count out the Dodgers. Like, no one's going to turn off the TV and say the Astros won it already. I just think that'd be... it'd be good from a fan perspective to have that level of suspense there going into the final innings.
Yeah. That would wrap up baseball for today. By the time we have a next show, we will have a World Series champion. Whether it happens tomorrow or the day before the show, we will...
It makes me sad, honestly.
Yeah, baseball's almost over. Baseball's almost over.
But then we get into free agency and winter meetings and all that kind of stuff.
Which could be really interesting with a couple trade pieces that are kind of being...
Giancarlo Stanton.
And you've got the Ohtani kid.
Right.
Where he would go. That becomes a whole new thing.
So you just to backtrack a little bit, we both said Houston's going to take this game tomorrow? Okay, cool. All right.
Week 8 for the NFL season is almost in the books, with the exception of the Monday night game between the Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs. We will do a little prediction as we wrap up the show. Starting to the beginning of Week 8, we had an abysmal Thursday night game between the Dolphins and the Ravens. Ravens put up 40 due to 3 defensive touchdowns.
Yep.
And a Joe Flacco concussion.
Elite Joe Flacco goes
down. Yes, the elite Joe Flacco. And even he was 10 for 15 with 101 yards and a touchdown. However, Baltimore's run game kind of got it going. You had Collins with 18 carries for 113 yards, and Javoris Allen 17 carries for 55 yards. When you get 160, 170 yards on the ground from your running backs, you really don't have to throw it that often.
Right.
And when you can jump on early to really put it in, you know, put on the pressure for Matt Moore making his first start since the Jay Cutler injury. I think it was, so you had one, two, actually you had five defensive touchdowns.
Jeez.
Yeah. He had five defensive touchdowns for Baltimore. That is nuts.
Five?
Or sorry. Why is it saying it says five down? Oh, for team, as a team throughout the season, they've had five.
Okay, they had five seemed like too much.
They had two.
Okay. Yeah.
They had two defensive touchdowns, which I believe both were pick sixes. But when you,
not surprising.
I think those came in the fourth quarter anyway, so really didn't. Game was kind of over at that point.
Yeah.
not an exciting game to watch. I was watching that down in Austin, so there was no major poll for the city of Austin for who was playing. It's kind of like, it's football, yay.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Sunday afternoon games.
How about we start with Sunday morning, huh?
Yeah, I guess we could do Sunday morning. It was a relevant game anyway. It's the Browns.
Well, I mean,
I know it's relevant for you being a Minnesota Viking fan, but did you expect to lose to the Browns?
No, I didn't.
Exactly.
But the Vikings were losing at halftime.
So were you worried?
I was not worried, okay. But there was still a glimmer of hope for the Browns that they would pick up their first win.
Not against the Vikings.
No.
That was a weird game, too.
It was.
I didn't wake up that early. I looked at the stat sheet after it. Quarter by quarter box score. You had 3, 9, 11, and 10. Was there a safety in there somewhere? Or a missed field goal?
It was probably an extra point that was missed. But... wow.
Yeah, not...
33 points, I mean, it's the Browns, but I mean...
Well, Kai Forbath had himself a day.
Cool, it's Kai Forbath.
Yeah. let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4 field goals of 34 yards or longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
Dropping dimes.
Yeah, dropping dimes.
Otherwise, there wasn't too much crazy offensive production.
Here's the kicker. Jerick McKinnon 1 yard run, and then Jerick McKinnon run for 2 point conversion. So that was an 8 point play.
All right.
So there that kind of sets up that
really
11
needed
point
those
quarter.
Extra point, right. Not one extra point.
Yeah.
From the extra point.
Case
Keenum with 43 passing attempts though.
Yeah, 288 for, well, 40, if you're throwing a ball 43 times,
you should have more than
288.
You should be over 300, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the Browns have their quarterback situation figured out now.
Maybe, we'll see.
Sunday noon games. Bears hung close.
They did.
With Saints.
Was how did they get to 12? Is that four field goals?
It is.
Or is that...
That, I believe, is two field goals and a touchdown and a failed two-point conversion.
Oh, okay.
Relatively certain on that. However, coming out of that game, yeah, it was a Tariq Cohen 1 yard reaching touchdown over the pile in a two-point conversion fail.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of that game, though, we have another what is a catch moment. Zach Miller for the Bears had a ball in his hands, was going to the ground. My opinion and most of Twitter was like, that's a catch. Officials go under the hood, say it's not a catch. But Zach Miller also dislocates his knee in the process and has anterior damage. However, I got this from Bleacher Report not that long ago. Bears announced Zach Miller's surgery was successful.
Good stuff.
So he will not lose a leg, which was the big fear for both him, his family, and the team, because mm-hmm. that could be an issue where you got to get in there and fix it. It becomes a whole different scenario than just a typical ligament tear or a dislocated knee.
Yeah, not even like out for the season, but and even beyond like ending his career, but
right.
losing a limb. Limb, yeah.
And I think the NFL needs to set clear, defined guidelines for what is a catch.
I agree.
Because it changes every year. You had the Dez Bryant catch in the playoffs 2 years ago. That wasn't a catch. You had the Zach Miller catch that was a catch, not a catch. There's so many.
Depends on what officials you have, too.
Right, but I mean, that's why it needs to be so clear and cut, mm-hmm. where players know, coaches know, fans know, officials know, where these are the guidelines. They're black and white. There's no gray to it. Because I think it would help out more than just, say, the Bears or anything, but the league in general, where right. everything is defined as
be more transparent and
right.
cut and clear as far as what you mean.
Are the Bills the team to beat in the AFC North?
It's funny to think about it like that, but maybe.
Bills shut down Amari Cooper.
What do you think?
I think the Bills are the team to beat. The Patriots are good, but they do not look like the Patriots of last year. The Bills look even better. Defensively, they're probably one of the top five defenses in NFL, maybe with the exception of...
Are you talking the East?
No, in
the Bills?
Yeah.
They're in the AFC East.
Oh, did I say North? Yes. North would be Cleveland, like Pittsburgh, Baltimore. Yeah. Okay. Buffalo looks like the team that the Patriots are really going to struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see when they play each other. So they will play twice within a month. December 3rd at New England, December 3rd at Buffalo, and then Christmas Eve at New England.
Okay. Could be a snow game in New England.
It could be a snow game in Buffalo, too.
That's true. It was like a long time ago, but you remember 6 years ago they had that crazy snowstorm and it buried the stadium. It had like 1 or 2 feet of snow.
Right. That was a interesting winter, I think, around the entire U.S.
Yeah.
Bengals squeak one out against the Colts.
Congratulations.
Bengals don't look great, but not Colt bad, though.
No. At the beginning of the year, they were, but not right now.
Patriots manhandle the Chargers for the most part. Falcons squeak one out against the Jets. I think the Jets look relatively decent with old man McCown behind center.
Mm-hmm.
Eagles, for sure, out of the entire NFL, are the team to beat.
I would say so.
The Eagles look fantastic, and Carson Wentz has grown so much from year one to year two, and really hasn't. The maybe one addition they had that has made a big impact is getting Alshon Jeffrey, because it takes pressure off of Nelson Agholor, who you can then put in a slot position, which makes him a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
LeGarrette Blount adds a different thing to it, but
he hasn't been as big of an impact as
right.
they thought.
You still have Corey Clement and Wendell Smallwood back there, too.
They thought he was going to be a big-time catcher out of the backfield, too, mm-hmm. and be able to rush a little bit more, but he just hasn't really got it going yet. And then our nap game of the week, which was the Texans and Seahawks.
That was not a nap game of the week.
That's
what we called a nap game of the week, but that was exciting.
Exactly. Before the game was played, we called the nap game of the week just by default of having Cowboys-Redskins.
That's the only other nap game of the week should have been Cowboys-Redskins.
I mean, I don't know, with that matchup.
The Texans look good.
They do.
If they could string together some wins, they could feasibly, if they can beat Jacksonville, which is doable, they could take the AFC South. Because Andrew Luck is not coming back anytime soon for the Colts.
Deshaun Watson is the man.
Dude. I forget who said it yesterday, but hand him the Rookie of the Year.
Richard Sherman, I think, said that.
Yeah. You got to just give it to him already. He was, let's see here, he had 8 carries for 67 yards. As a quarterback, having 67 yards carrying on eight, which means you have some designed run plays right there.
And he was making his receivers look good, too. I mean, Will Fuller was a fantasy god yesterday.
He was. Two
touchdowns, 125 yards, and then DeAndre Hopkins is over 200 receiving yards with a touchdown.
Eight catches, too. So you got to give some credit to these receivers on moving in open space and breaking tackles. But when your quarterback is also 19 for 30 with 402 yards, the only negative there is three interceptions.
Right.
However, this is Seattle, and they have one of the better defensive back cores. So you're going to throw some picks to them because they're going to read the routes, they're going to jump the routes, and they're going to do what they need to do. But, man, 402, that's pretty good.
Really good. And then we had the Steelers beat the Lions 20-15, which that was the Sunday night game, which brings us to tonight's game, the Monday night game between the Broncos and the Chiefs. What are you thinking here?
I got to think Chiefs at home. They're going to be a little irritated after losing to the Raiders on Thursday last week.
And do you think Jamal Charles is going to get booed tonight?
No, I think he would get...
Not even after his comments saying that he's always wanted to be Bronco?
I think he will. I think some people will boo, but Jamal Charles was the primary back that got him into the playoffs several years in a row. The dude has earned some respect there. So I think it's going to be a mix of boos and some applause. But I will take the Chiefs. Kareem Hunt is contending with Deshaun Watson for Rookie of the Year for the most part.
Give me the Chiefs 34-24.
I'm going to take it 28-10.
Wow.
I don't think Denver's offense has fixed itself yet.
Okay.
So that'll do it for the Monday edition of the starting lineup. We will be back on Thursday with a World Series champion.
Sad.
Sad. A look ahead to MLB offseason and high-priced free agents out there.
Jake Arrieta.
Yeah. And then week 9 for football. And any other fun things that come up.
Exactly.
So we will be back on Thursday.
See ya.